sweet with the blues on this wonderful, wonderful station. Just take a lively companion wherever you go. Take a portable radio. Take a portable radio.
All right, the Radio Stuff Show, episode 82. Happy to be here. Hi, I'm Larry Gifford, radio consultant and talent coach at LarryGifford.com. Thanks for stopping by. This is a weekly show about radio for radio. You can find all 82 episodes only at RadioStuffPodcast.com. We're also on SoundCloud and TuneIn and iTunes and Stitcher and all those places, but all the episodes are at RadioStuffPodcast.com. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at The Radio Stuff. Our top story. All right, so I'm here to confess, I am a fan of the Serial podcast. I know. You wouldn't think that sort of thing would be controversial, but apparently this week it is. I wrote a blog piece about Serial called Don't Be a Serial Hater. And just to give you some background, it was inspired after a Facebook exchange with someone who posted an article on Serial from Vanity titled, Why Serial Won't Do Much for Hollywood or Podcasting. And with his own comment attached to that article that read, and this is exactly why I feel the At Serial podcast is overrated. I challenged this person, who, like me, is a media consultant and whom I'm not going to mention on this podcast for reasons that will become clear. I commented on his post. Hey, there's some great lessons to be learned by radio, by the style and presentation of enterprise material here. Overrated because it's popular? Isn't more exposure and success for audio content our ultimate goal? Is Serial perfect? No. But to dismiss it as overrated is short-sighted, IMHO, in my humble opinion. His comment back was, Larry, you should read the Variety piece and listen to the episode of where take this up. I've extracted their names in the name of the podcast. So I did, and I didn't agree with the criticism, so I blogged about it. It's a fine blog post, a little long for Larry, somewhat clever, borrowing Serial episode titles for my headlines throughout. Very clever, if I do say so myself. I'm certainly proud of it. And I react to the article from Vanity and their podcast point by point using their verbatim words. For instance, this was out of the Variety article. The podcast is really no more or less engrossing than the countless other true whodunits common all over movies and TV. Even an average episode of a relatively low-profile TV staple like NBC News Magazine Dateline routinely features cases like Syed's. You could even argue recreating these crimes for TV is a more sophisticated form of storytelling. Variety goes on to criticize Serial for being unoriginal and using tried and true storytelling methods, and then later declares Serial irrelevant to the success of future podcasts because it's too unique and too difficult to recreate. A little contradictory. So then on this podcast, they were chatting about claims that in the wake of Serial's success, there are claims that this is the golden age of podcasting. And here's just a few of their points. I list them all on the blog, LarryGifford.com. They say Serial has 18 million exposures less than the average episode of NCIS on CBS. Now, folks, you got to remember, NCIS is the number one drama on TV. Now, Dateline would probably be more appropriate to compare. It maxes out at about 7 million viewers. Serial has about 1.5 million downloads per episode. But since when are we judging radio and audio content's success against television? We never have. It's truly a ridiculous comparison. This is an origins story. This American Life launched it. It's, you know, a platform thing and all these distribution points called public radio stations. So they're criticizing it for using a brand and leveraging that brand to get exposure. Now, This American Life under it was the underwriter for most of this season. So I guess they're saying, hey, don't try this at home, kids, because you're not going to have as much success as Serial because you don't have Ira Glass in your pocket. Okay, but I think most people in the biz are smart enough to realize that. But it shouldn't keep them from trying or launching podcasts or other radio shows on the backs of established brands that they've already created and invested in. I mean, every radio station has a brand and personality brands attached to it, or a television partner, or so a print partner, that all have their own brands where you can launch products and whether it's a podcast or a blog or whatever. And I think that's a great idea. I don't know why we are seeing that as a negative. And then they say they use what happens next method of storytelling. The genre murder mystery is as old as Agatha Christie and the style as old as Dickens. Somehow in the world of podcasting, it's fresh. They laugh. I don't see a problem with this. We should be using every trick in the book. There is no need to recreate the wheel every time we launch something new. Good storytelling is good storytelling. And I go, there's probably five or six more points, and I'm not going to bother you with those right now. But after I posted the blog, both hosts fired back at me. And in one tweet, I noted they seemed bothered by Serial's success. It was my observation between the comments that it's overrated and they're snickering on the podcast about its lack of innovation, and then the need to trump up some case against its popularity or at least try to minimize it. I thought, boy, they seem really bothered by this. One of the hosts tweeted at me that calling something overrated is not the same as being bothered by it. I admitted it's my observation. He assured me I was incorrect. He also suggested that I go about making my points but keep him out of it, which is interesting since he was the one who suggested I listen and react to his podcast to begin with. But I respect this person's wishes, so I'm leaving him out of it, at least on the podcast. In fact, I edited pieces of the podcast to insert here so you could hear them say these words, instead of me interpreting it for you. But in light of their reaction, I'm not going to. I'm going to respect their wishes to keep them out of it. So I'm keeping them out of it. Instead, I'll just remind everyone that communication's not perfect. Not online, not on radio or podcasts, and certainly not always in person. Intentions are great. But it's your responsibility to make sure the message you are intending to send is the message received. And always remember, perception is reality. The words you use, the tone of voice, your attitude, the energy that you put towards communicating, it all matters. And people perceive it all. And they use that to really figure out what you're trying to say. Back to Serial. The final episode is out. Now, I've not listened to it yet, so don't tell me what's going to happen. I don't want, spoiler. But I'm excited to listen to it. And I love how this podcast has stormed its way into pop culture and conversation. In my house, it was conversation around the Thanksgiving dinner table. We Skype with my in-laws every Saturday, and it's been a topic of conversation there. I have a radio client in Cape Town who we discuss it every week. And we use it to actually, coach. I coach talent using the Serial podcast as new ways you can tell stories. One night, my wife decided to binge. She was catching up, so she binged, listened, and then we listened to the new episode together on the couch instead of watching TV, which was sweet and pleasant and old-timey, and it was great. I love it. And it's even beginning to influence the way I'm telling stories on this podcast. Now, as a talent coach and a radio consultant, I'm imagining the influence this podcast can have on radio. I think it can influence the future of audio communication. I can hear a whole new wave of personal journalism on news talk radio stations, or even sports talk radio stations, or morning shows. I can imagine newscasts with a more familiar, intimate tone. Personal sides and anecdotes. Just the same way the narrative on Serial kind of sucks you in. It's different. And why shouldn't we try it? As a News Talk PD, I was real passionate and supportive of enterprise reporting and in-depth investigations. And I believe Serial has cleared the way for commercial radio stations to move forward in that direction with gusto. And it is a risk because they won't all work. But it means there's a chance it will work. And you should go for it. There's an appetite for this stuff. I applaud Serial for borrowing successful storytelling techniques. You know, sometimes we get so concerned with being original or unique or innovative that we forget about a couple other words, cultivation and ideation. Cultivation and ideation seem like cheating because these things exist. You look around at your radio station or in your career or in your life and you gather all your available assets and you get all the ideas and the brainstorms you've had in the past and all the thoughts you have about things and you put them in a pile and you reorganize them and you repurpose them to greater success. And I think we should do more of this. I think we're too hung up on being uber original. We need to be innovators. And you know, the book, The Innovator's Dilemma, you got people hung up on that word innovation. And innovation's really hard because you're creating something that doesn't exist. Here you're taking things that do exist and creating something new from it. And I think that has as much value and is probably more accessible to most of us. And finally, I think anytime any audio content captures the imagination of people, community, my in-laws, the media, we should celebrate this. Let's celebrate Serial, for crying out loud. It is good. It's great storytelling. They use audio effectively. Yeah, there's some areas I wish they would have poked a little harder in or some avenues that for whatever reason they decided not to go down. And I'm sure over the course of time, Sarah Koenig, the host, will enlighten all of us about sort of some of the obstacles she had to create that. But hey, bravo. Hey, and I think we should use Serial as a lightning rod for our industry, to regain our swagger and expand our personal definitions of what's possible in this space as it pertains to content creation, monetization, and our own definitions of success. Sermon over.
Everybody's voting for the friendly voice of radio, the people's choice. East Coast, West Coast, in between, it's radio that makes the scene.
In episode 81 last week, Dave Beasing, the PD of The Sound in LA, talked about his goal of being the most well-written radio station in the country. It's a great interview. You should check it out. You can go straight to the interview if you just log on to radiostuffpodcast.com and clicked Just Interviews. And I believe great writing is one of those lost arts of radio. I mean, Dave is a reminder that there are still some in radio who pride themselves on creative writing. It's something that I built my career on as an anchor, both in news and sports, and production writing and imaging. And I think there's tremendous value to hiring writers within a radio station. And I found another writer who's on the radio while I was in L.A. And I sat down and chatted with him for about 20 minutes. Take a listen. Here we are in the lovely Marie Callender's on Wilshire Boulevard in Los Angeles.
But I would suggest if anybody goes anywhere for lunch, it would be to a standalone business. We're only here because it's convenient.
But this was your choice.
I know it was my choice because you have an appointment nearby.
Okay.
And it was convenient. I don't know this area very well, but I really prefer to go to standalone businesses and support small business.
And this is the voice of an award-winning anchor and host.
Oh!
The longtime voice of Fox Sports' Best Damn Sports Show, period.
That's right, damn it.
A restaurateur and producer of film.
Yes. Full-length major motion picture. Well, full-length motion picture.
And one of the most creative writers in radio that I've ever come across.
You're a fine judge of talent, Larry.
I am. This is Mr. Tom, two M's, Looney.
Two M's for the new millennium.
Oh! Tom, welcome to the Radio Stuff Podcast.
Sure.
How's it going?
Oh, excellent.
Yeah?
Good to be here. Good to see you.
So I want to talk to you about a couple of things that are near and dear to your heart.
One is
Leonardo da Vinci.
Yes, okay. Anchoring on a national network. You're the national sports anchor on Fox Sports Radio.
Yes,
you were on the JT the Brick Show as a host.
Yes. The JT the Brick Show with Tom Looney.
Is it with Tom Looney?
Yes, it is. That was added in 2009.
Wow.
Or as some people like to say, 2009.
Congratulations.
Sure.
When I came to LA, I would listen to your updates because you have a way of incorporating sound and choosing the right language. What's your process for beginning to write an update?
Well, first of all, see what the lead stories are, and that has changed because the lead story, you got to pay attention to Twitter, you got to look at the headlines at foxsports.com, espn.com, cbssports.com, and pay attention to what the lead stories are because they change a lot quicker than they used to. People have instant access to information. So you got to make sure it's updated and relevant, keep an eye on the clock as to what's happening, what the lead stories might be. If it broke 6 hours ago, it might be old. Unless there's some new sound to go with it, might just need to move on to the newer stories. So first of all, I take a look at how something's expiration date. And expiration dates now happen much quicker than they used to. So pay attention to what's really happening at this moment, what's trending at this moment, because people have access to information. They want to hear something that they might not and be able to use before. Yeah, but also, anytime you can work in any stories that always pull in more ears, any trickeries you can use in that way, anything about Mike Tyson, anything about Floyd Mayweather, anything about Tiger Woods, Kobe Bryant, especially the people who are toxic, pulls people in.
You find stories about people rather than stories about teams?
I guess that would just always describe me anyway. I always find, I love politics, but not because of liberal versus conservative. I love the people. I'm fascinated by anyone who has the arrogance to think I can be mayor, I can be congressman. But that's a beautiful arrogance. It's amazing. The cockiness to think I can play in the NBA, I can be better than Michael Jordan, I can be the best fighter in the world. So I'm always fascinated by the people in sports. And the arrogance and cockiness to think at 17 that you can play in the NBA or that you can play Division I football. I'm fascinated by the characters of sports.
So you cultivate these stories, and then how do you stylize them?
Well, I've always thought it was very important. If people say radio is a dying business, then I want to be the last one standing. So I always want to make sure that even if you've got what some people would say would be the mundane chore of doing sports updates, do that, but put a quarter turn on what's mundane and make it less, put some Tabasco on it and it's no longer mundane. And so that's what I try to do. Try not to do it the way everybody else does it. It's so much easier now to do it. There's thesaurus.com. Instead of writing...
Using the thesaurus.
Yes. I don't necessarily have to use it as much, but it's there for everyone to use.
Yes.
And so find other adjectives, other adverbs to use, rather than try saying something in different ways than it's already been said before.
How did you develop your style?
Here's another thing too. Write in short sentences. If you're going to steal something that the AP wrote, that sentence is too long anyway. Make that one sentence three sentences. Short sentences are a really big talking bullet point. Never connect things. Never use the word as for the rest of your life. Yes, I'm sitting here having lunch with Larry Gifford as he's here in Los Angeles. Who talks like that? But sometimes people write like that. But nobody talks like that. Write the way people talk. People talk in bullet points.
How did your style come about?
Well, I've always enjoyed being the center of attention. I've done stand-up comedy since I was 8. I have, by the way, the headshot to prove it. I have my headshot with me, I'll show you, from when I was 9 years old. I'll give it to you to use if you'd like.
Thank you.
And I think that I've always loved words. So you find a way to use words to get people's attention, and that's what you need in radio anyway. A lot of times people listen to radio as a secondary thing. They're painting the house, they're driving the car. So you want to bring them in. the way you bring them in is with colors. You bring them in by use the Crayola box of 64 and bring all those colors to your writing.
And who taught you how to do that? Because everybody has that opportunity, but not everybody's doing it.
It's interesting that you say that. A couple of things. Let's start with my mother, who was a reading specialist, so she didn't really trust teachers to teach my brother and I how to read. So before we ever went to kindergarten, you know, we'd have to read 5 minutes before we went to bed. Or at least that's what she told us. She probably set the timer for 15. My brother would read a half hour. I kept checking her and saying, isn't that five? But that was the difference between my brother and I. And she would always remind me to read with personality. When I used to read, this is when I was 4 and 5 years old. Read with expression. And so, and isn't it odd that when other, I went to Catholic, small Catholic schools, and when other Catholic schools would come over and visit, when you take a look at how much we change, sometimes we don't. I would be the one to represent my class who could read with the most expression, isn't that odd? So maybe it's something that's innate, and if you go trace it all the way back, it's probably my mother, who was a reading teacher, who didn't teach me how to write, but at least taught me how to read with expression. And the whole thing about broadcasting is, successful broadcasting is voiceovers, is to read without sounding like you're reading.
How did you learn to use audio the way you use it?
When you take a look at the way I use audio, and I use very short sound in the way that I write very short sentences. And I must add, I did have an English teacher in college. One of the most important classes I took in high school was typing. Isn't that amazing? And the most important class in college was a basic English 101 class where the teacher also taught me. So backing up here a second, the teacher said, when you write something, many times your second sentence should be your first sentence. Our first sentence is just like a first gear. We're just chugging along. And it was a great piece of advice. It almost always works. And now with Microsoft Word, sometimes if you're writing something, you realize many times your eighth sentence, which you just like, ooh, that's a good sentence. You can move that to your first sentence. Short sound, a couple of things. People have short attention spans. Many times sound is too long. And I don't know where I got that philosophy, but remember, if the sound, people are so obsessed. I mean, sometimes people don't want to use sound because it means less of them. But if it's good, it's good, and you'll keep your job. And short sound also means more me.
So you have 52 seconds in an update.
Yes.
How many stories do you get in on average in 52 seconds?
Well, it depends on if we're giving scores and highlights or doing stories. So that just depends on what's happening that day. If it's a more story-intensive day, because sometimes it's about stories. Sometimes a star quarterback in the National Football League gets in a car accident and the Cleveland Browns are going to start Johnny Football. That would be a story-intensive day. Other days, it's just about the games. So if somebody comes out of a closet one day, that's a bigger story. That might lead, that's storytelling ability. Other days, you have to find clever ways to give scores and highlights. So it's hard to answer how many stories I can get in. But in terms of sound, if you keep it short, I can get in 3 or 4 or 5 pieces of sound in a 52-second update. And as you know, I also use sound as transition. Instead of saying, to the NBA, I just play an NBA horn. If I have to go to a golf store, it's, hey, it's Tiger, which I beat to death. And Tiger was voice message. Or a football sound effect if I transition to football. So sometimes you can use sound also just as a transition rather than announcing that you're making a transition. Saves you time.
People say your updates are funny. Are you trying to be funny?
Yes. That's always been very important to me. But it's important to get the information across first. If the information's of a serious nature, you always have to take that in consideration. But yes, yeah, I think it's informative, entertaining, and relevant. Entertaining is funny's cousin.
Now, how is that different when you're hosting?
not much different when you're hosting. I think that's the rule for a host. That's the rule for a guest. Why have a guest on unless they're entertaining, informative, and relevant? And every host should be entertaining, informative, and relevant. And you should always try to be, if you've got personality, make sure that personality comes across, and then people feel like they know you. It's even more important than being, there's broadcasters and there's personalities. And I think if you can get your personality to come out, jump out of the radio, then that's the way to go. If you don't have, you don't think of yourself as having, we all have wonderful personalities, but if you don't think of yourself as being a person with a more colorful personality, then just try to be an excellent broadcaster and outwork everybody else.
How does your role change from update anchor to host? Like how do you prepare differently?
Well, as a host and a co-host with JT in my case, it's better to, you have to get more into the details if you're going to talk about, I can't, with the updates, I can just tell you who the final four teams are in the college football playoff. When it comes to hosting and co-hosting a show, you better have an opinion on who the final four teams are and why Baylor and TCU don't deserve it and why Ohio State does or vice versa. And you better have done your research about who plays for those four teams and why they deserve to be there, maybe why they don't. You have to have details with it. You have to have opinions. You got to make sure that you've got opinions that cut through. If you don't have opinions, you're in the wrong business. When it comes to hosting.
Sure. So now, as a host, co-host of JT's, what's the biggest challenge of working with somebody else? Is it,
With JT, he's like a runaway freight train. So you have to know and find out the best way to jump on and jump off that freight train. And you have to learn, and he has to learn when I want to speak and when to, because a lot of times people want to tap each other on the shoulder when it's your turn. You know, people say things like, no, you just, and sometimes you can't over worry it too. If you end up talking at the same time, every Woody Allen movie has people talking at the same time. You don't worry too much about that. If you're comfortable with your co-host, you can't worry about word count. You got to be a good team player. Helps to have played football. JT played rugby. I played football. And so it's all about the team. And it's all about the goal of doing good radio.
You said don't worry about word count. What do you mean by that?
You know how they have a kick pitch count in baseball. JT talks more than me in our weekday show. So what? I got the chair. I've been there 10 years. If he ends up talking more than me or we end up going to a break, I don't get a question in for the guest, or my opinion doesn't come in before the break, it's okay. There's another segment coming up. And a segment after that, I've had the chair 10 years. But no matter how long you've had the chair, if you've got the chair, don't sweat small stuff. And it's all small stuff. There's a book with that name.
Yeah.
One time somebody asked Jim Lampley, Jim Lampley was calling the Oscar De La Hoya Ricardo Mayorga fight, and there was a knockdown in the first round. And Emmanuel Stewart had been talking when the knockdown happened. It kind of messed up the call for Jim Lampley. And I remember Michael Thompson on ESPN was interviewing Jim Lampley. He said, does it bother you when someone steps on your knockdown call, your knockout call? And Jim Lampley said, there'll be others. And that was the exact, that's the best attitude to have.
Yeah.
Somebody screws up your home run, your color commentator screams over your home run call, there's going to be another home run. And if you don't get your question in to the guest or your opinion in before the break because your co-host talks more than you, big deal.
What have you learned from being a restaurateur and a producer that's helped you in radio?
Oh, teamwork and how you treat your coworkers no matter what your position is, because you never know. I think maybe it helped as a restaurant owner that I had been a waiter, so I had been in their shoes. Don't forget the shoes that you used to walk in. And so make sure, you never know also, and that's just life, when a producer of yours, a coworker, the intern, might be your boss one day too. And that's the way you should. And so, know people's names. Don't take 6 months to know a new person's name. Nothing sings to people more than their name, especially in a we work in a guy's business, a locker room. But you don't need to know a guy's birthday. Just know a guy's name. You know, guys don't need that. They have a girlfriend for that. And their family. Just start with names. Remember people's names. Come up with a way to remember. It all starts with that, with treating people with dignity, respect, and love. Start with remembering their names as soon as they come in the radio station. Remember how to treat the new people at school. Because everyone's had that at a new job where you're stunned at how poorly people are treating you. And when you're new at school and you're stunned at how unfriendly everybody is, well, there's a way to change that. It starts with you.
Well, I mean, you were the first guy to welcome me to LA when I got here because I sent you one of my 500 emails trying to get a job here. And you were running a, what was the site?
It's RadioDigest.com.
Yes. It's kind of a rumor site for radio, right?
Right, yeah. Yep.
And I reached out and said I was in town. And by the way, like, hey, just welcome like to town.
Oh, excuse me, I interrupted you.
No, there'll be others.
Okay. Oh, I like that. Yeah, I'm glad that I was one of the first to welcome you to town, and that's the way to be. So I was stunned. I went to work at KFWB in 1998. And at the time, they were trying to change the radio station from more of a dry headline news type of operation to personality-oriented deliveries. So they brought in Big Joe McDonald and me as the first two sports guys to have a little more personality. They brought in Kathleen Sullivan as an anchor, who had been on Good Morning America or CBS Morning News or one of those. She had a big resume, hosted the Olympics. And I was stunned at how there was this great newsroom in an old bowling alley on Argyle and Sunset, and I was kind of surprised at how unfriendly people were. I was so excited to be there, and the sports guy was in the middle of the newsroom, and I'm a news junkie, and I thought, well, in the future I'll make sure I will continue to work in this business, that when new people come in, I'm going to change this, at least do my part with that. And a lot of times, because the non-personality people had a little axe to grind with the personality people when they came in. And eventually, you know, people loosened up there. But I knew from that point on in life I was going to change that aspect. So be nice to the new people. Because after a while, they're not new people anymore. And they're your co-workers and sometimes your producers or your boss.
So we're coming to the end of the year here. 2015 is upon us.
Right.
I want you to tell me, what radio headlines would you like to see in 2015?
Radio business smiles as Americans throw their television sets out. What headlines? Well, I would like to see more people get more jobs. It thrills me when more sports stations and networks go on up and running. At one time, there was just ESPN, then there was ESPN and Fox Sports Radio, then ESPN Fox Sports Radio One-on-One, which is now Yahoo. And I never cheered for, there was always rumors. I remember that One-on-One was going out of business and the richest guy in the world bought it. Remember, was it Paul Allen that bought it? Yeah. I think it was Paul that bought it when it became Sporting News. And I thought, that's great news. You don't want Fox Sports Radio. I want anybody going out of business. And then CBS Sports Radio came along, NBC Sports Radio. That's good. That's a growing part of what some people are saying is a dying business. So the great headline I want to see is that all my friends and colleagues who want jobs in broadcasting, get them.
And radio is not dead?
No, radio's not dead, but I worry about it in the way that anytime I see any article where cars aren't, I want all new cars to have radios for the rest of my life, at least, and most of everybody's. I worry about podcasts, about radio in the same way that a musician worries about selling, it was CDs, and now it's getting downloads, when so many people can download music for free. A lot of people aren't going to and listen to music for free and pick the music they listen to, especially when it comes to music radio. Why listen to the radio? Well, young people like to design their own radio stations in their iPod and on their iPhones instead of listening to radio stations. So I worry for music radio. For spoken word radio, I think we've got a longer life because we can provide late breakings. We can provide something that they can't have otherwise. And that's live interaction, talking about sports that's always changing. And you can't set up your own. The immediacy of sports talk radio is what really will make it live longer than music radio. I worry for music radio more than sports talk. How's that for a thousand word answer to say, I worry more for music radio than I do for sports talk radio?
If you were a hospital administrator, what condition is radio in?
Well, music radio is in intensive care. And sports talk radio is in fair condition.
Why?
And by the way, fair condition means... No, fair condition's good.
Oh, is it good?
Yes, fair condition means your vital signs are fine and everything looks good. See, when people are injured, we were talking about this earlier. There's fair condition, there's stable condition, there's critical condition. And music radio's in critical condition. There's problems with vital signs and blood pressure and function. But with... fair condition is what the condition you want to be in at the hospital. You're eventually going home. Cam Newton was in fair condition for exactly 24 hours, and then he went home. So fair condition's okay.
Awesome.
Vital signs are fine. Blood pressure's fine.
And you, what condition are you in now, Tom?
What condition am I in?
Yeah.
I am in superb condition.
You are.
My testosterone level's so high, my nose is running.
Hey, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for spending some time with us.
Great talking to you.
Educates. Syncopates. Radio communicates. Radio, the sound of year-round pleasure.
The morning show Morning Glory at Jack FM in Oxfordshire created their own serial mystery the past couple of weeks. It started when the show hosts, Trev and Caroline, decided to visit a turkey farm to pick out a bird for Christmas dinner.
Look at them. I mean, they...
They are going to feed a family of, I don't know, eight, nine? That's a great Christmas day right there.
No, look at them. They're going to go on and have a long life together.
You know, they're going to be simmering on the hob for 20 minutes.
No, look at them. Enjoying frolicking through the fields, going down to the orchards.
Right now, they are not pleasuring anybody. But on Christmas Day, eight people going to feel the love.
No. It's not happening.
Trev picks up the story.
We've got Caroline, who's fallen in love with a couple of turkeys. She's gone to Dave, who works at Callow Farm, and I've got my turkeys from there for a good few years now. And so I took you there innocently just to show you maybe you want to consider it this
year.
You know,
I
come
ordered
along,
a turkey,
and
then overnight I had a little think about it, and I thought, I've seen it now. I've seen it running through the orchards. I've seen its big little eyes. I've seen it flapping its wings. I've seen it breathing and alive, and I don't want to see it on my dinner plate because I can't picture that.
Here's some footage, some audio of which I'm not sure if you knew we were recording you at this time, but now you've got two turkeys. The only two turkeys left at Callow Farm are your turkeys. They're alive.
Yeah.
And you've named them...
There are plenty left. They're just dead.
You've named them Sage and Onion.
Yeah.
All right. Here's you having a little chat with them. They're boy and girl turkey, by the way, just to let you know.
So, Onion, you and Sage, what do you reckon? Yeah?
So more on that on the way for you pretty soon.
There's going to be a romance.
As Caroline talks turkey.
This is Jack's Morning Glory.
So after a few days back and forth, Caroline was to announce if she was going to save the turkeys or eat them. And her announcement came just after 8 o'clock last Thursday.
All right, this is your big turkey announcement, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, here it is.
Jack's Morning Glory.
Jack's cook it or keep it.
Right.
So, we're going to put it to the vote. And I'm very confident I will win this.
I'm not. You're rubbish, aren't you? I mean, surely people eat turkeys at Christmas. That's what they're there to do.
JackOxfordshire.co.uk. Cook it or keep it.
You know what I see?
What?
I see smiley, happy faces around the dinner table.
No.
I feel the love of the bird in my hands on Christmas morning as I'm massaging the butter into the skin.
No.
And I am... sniffing the turkey being cooked in my house and then carving it up as the man of the house, the hunter-gatherer. and delivering Christmas dinner to my family.
I see the future of our turkeys, sage and onion. I see them, you know, sage and onion, got a little soft spot for each other. I see turkey babies in the future. I see them with their turkey children running through the orchard. But it's not up to us.
You know what
it's
I say?
It's up to you. JackOxfordshire.co.uk. How are you voting? Do you want to cook the turkey? Do you want to keep the turkey?
I say cook it. That's what I say. Cook it, cook it, cook it.
Keep it.
JackOxfordshire.co.uk. And now, actually, I'm just looking now. It says, you decide. Caroline wants to keep the turkeys. Trev wants to eat them. It doesn't get much simpler than that. JackOxfordshire.co.uk. Cook it!
So the voting lasted a week, during which they found ways to keep the bit alive and interesting and new. They interviewed farmers, and they interviewed PETA, and they even talked to listeners about
it. So I'm a total meat eater, and if cool. I could live off meat and gravy, I would.
Yes.
But it's really good, obviously, to know and be informed where your meat's coming from.
Absolutely, keep it local
so
as well.
I think, oh yeah, definitely. So I think the fact that also Karen did her research and she wanted to get a turkey from this farm is brilliant. But the big mistake is to obviously go and actually pick your turkey when it's alive. That's what you don't want to
yeah,
do.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I think I'd rather, yeah, I think it's better to go to the supermarket. You know it's had a great life.
If you can't,
if you,
no, this is where, no, this is you're being a hypocrite. Because if you can't look, if you can't look the turkey in the eye or the cow in the eye or whatever you're about to eat in the eye and say, you know what, bring it on. You're about to be a tasty treat.
Then, sorry, Jane,
you can't do that. You can't decide, oh, I can't look at it.
The hosts also created a parody video and sang about the turkeys to Frozen's Let It Go. Here's the song. The video is online at radiostuffpodcast.com.
A bird walks round a field today, gobbling with his friend. They're happy being together. That shouldn't have to end. The anger's building like a swirling storm inside. I can't keep it in, heaven knows I've tried. Don't wring their necks, just leave them be. Turkey breast has never been juicy. Protect, don't kill, just let them grow. Just let them grow. Let them go. Let them go. Instead, have a leg of lamb. Let them go. Let them go. Try chicken before ham. It's not my choice. You get to have your say. Leave the giblets in. These turkeys are gonna see Boxing Day.
Your turkey is tasty and deserves to get the chop. These ugly birds are for dinner, and that is never gonna stop. Don't mess with the tradition of our Christmas Day. It's never gonna change. Cold turkey on Boxing Day.
Then just before we went to air here on December 18th at 8 a.m., the big reveal.
It's gone worldwide, isn't it?
It's gone worldwide. Yeah. You know, we've had interviews with vegans, we've had interviews with animal welfare groups, we've had interviews with farmers, with farming authorities. We've read the headlines. Brian May's got involved. He's written an article in The Telegraph. He sent some tweets. You know, it's something that people have felt quite passionate about.
Mm.
And last night, at midnight, yep. Midnight this morning, the voting ended.
Yes.
So this morning we can reveal that 67% of you voted in favour of saving the turkeys. Yes! So Sage and Onion are safe. We've been working with Peter to make sure that their forever home is going to be far away from that Christmas dinner table. And today they're going to be heading to the Peter-approved animal sanctuary.
So that's it, right? No turkey for them on Christmas. Except Trev slipped this in right after the announcement.
Okay, all right, there we go. Look, it's all over, people. You did the right thing in the end, but I'm still having turkey on Christmas Day. It's Jack, 13 minutes past 8. This is Tom Petty. The irony of this.
Come on, Trevor, you can't go through a whole bit like that and say, well, I'm going to have turkey anyway. Acting. Play along. Improv. Yes, and... but some online have complained that it's a tired old bit that other radio stations have already done. Even the names of the turkey, Sage and Onion, aren't original. But gang, if it's new to your audience, it's new. You know, just like serial borrowing storytelling techniques, radio stations since the beginning of time have borrowed from each other. Why do you think radio, for the most part, is formatted the same everywhere in the world? Newscasts presented the same way. Traffic and weather are together. All of it started at one station and the others copied. They followed suit. They saw success and they said, eh, we should do that too. Just figure out a way to make it your own. It's like adding the Frozen song video. I'm sure 5 years ago that wasn't done. So you could be critical that people are copying contests or copying imaging or copying whatever, but it's flattery. Because it was successful, it worked, and if you can make it your own and make it feel new and fresh, do it. So the other thing they're going to do is on Sunday, there's going to be a two-hour special at 9 a.m. where listeners can, you know, check out all the interviews with the free-range farmers and the vegans and PETA, as well as hear from the organizations, including Compassion and World Farming. And so they've put together this whole show around it. Earlier this weekend. So that's pretty cool. Good for them. Congratulations, Jack. And that's the Radio Stuff Podcast. Email me at radiostuffpodcast@gmail.com with your story ideas and your comments. Special thanks this week to Radio Monitor, Tom Looney, and you for listening. Be sure to read my blog at larrygifford.com and think of me if you're in need of a radio consultant or talent coach. And there's still time to take advantage of that end of the year talent special we talked about last week. Details are on the blog at larrygifford.com. Find more radio stuff and see that Jack FM Frozen parody, the video, at radiostuffpodcast.com. All right, next week's the last episode of the year. Have fun, be creative, support each other, and share your radio stuff.